All right, good afternoon, everyone. It's Wednesday, not Thursday, and we've got a big event here on the campus tomorrow on Thursday. The Ordination Council for David McManus is meeting, and so we won't have a Thursday podcast to all our faithful listeners, but we definitely need to get Bill on one more podcast before he gets out of here. Bill has been called by Sandy Ridge Baptist Church in Hickory, North Carolina, and we are excited for Bill. No doubt he'll be up on sermon audio before you know it, and with a reduced teaching schedule, probably doing five podcasts a day, you know, he'll become Mr. News and Focus. But Hickory, North Carolina, right around the corner from us, about 3 hours, Sandy Ridge Baptist Church, and so Bill will be there first Sunday on Father's Day, and we look forward to hearing him on sermon audio real soon after that. David, we found an article from a blog of Institute for Family Studies, Nicholas Wolfinger.
Yep.
Counterintuitive trends in the link between premarital sex and marital stability. And let's face it, folks, premarital sex is alive and well in your congregation. Preacher, don't kid yourself. Youth pastor, don't kid yourself. Your best of kids who truly desire to follow the Lord. I mean, David, I believe that they oftentimes are in a vicious circle of repentance and desire for holiness, mm-hmm. and then find themselves suddenly making love and then repenting and probably have the most guilt and shame over this in anything in their walk.
Yeah, I think so, because I mean, we talk about lust and we talk about temptations and things from pornography to everything else all the time, but I think we kind of put our head in the sand a little bit about this and go, well, surely they're not doing that. They're probably doing other stuff, but they're probably not doing that. But I think what we're figuring out more and more is
they're
doing that, you know, and our single adult members are doing that. Dealing with this too.
Yeah. So this article is going to give us a little bit to think about. Let's get started, Brian.
American sexual behavior is much different today than it used to be. Today, most Americans think premarital sex is okay and will have three or more sexual partners before marrying. What, if anything, does premarital sex have to do with marital stability? This research brief shows that the relationship between divorce and the number of sexual partners women have prior to marriage is complex. I explore this relationship using data from the three most recent waves of the National Survey of Family Growth, the NSFG, collected in 2002, 2006 through 2010, and 2011 through 2013, for women marrying since the start of the new millennium. Women with 10 or more partners were the most likely to divorce, but this only became true in recent years.
Ten or more partners. I mean, that's inconceivable to me. That's a lot of partners.
Yeah. Women with 3 to 9 partners were less likely to divorce than the women with 2 partners, and women with 0 to 1 partners were the least likely to divorce.
So that's really the most important sentence, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Women with 0 to 1 partners were the least likely to divorce.
Yes.
So once you start crossing somewhere around the 3 threshold, things change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. David, you've read the rest of the article. Does he switch to talking about men, or
it mostly focuses on women? He mentions a few things towards the end about men, but I think maybe it's a better indicator with women, just because I think of the way society views sex between men and, you know, when it comes to men and women, you know, a woman admitting to have 10 or more partners, I mean.
A guy would brag about that.
Yeah, a secular guy would absolutely brag about that, and a woman would not. Maybe that's different in recent years. As this.
Maybe that's what this is indicating, David. Yeah. Maybe that dynamic is changing.
Yeah.
But we do know that there's clearly a difference between the way women look at sex and the way men look at sex.
Yes.
And for every woman represented here with these numbers, there was a man involved.
Clearly. Yes.
So what is not written is clearly implied. Yeah. Earlier research found that having multiple sex partners prior to marriage could lead to less happy marriages, often increased the odds of divorce. But sexual attitudes and behaviors continue to change in America, and some of the strongest predictors of divorce in years gone by no longer matter as much as they once did. In my 2005 book, Understanding the Divorce Cycle, I showed that the transmission of divorce between generations became weaker as divorce grew more common. Could the same thing have happened with sexual behavior? Somewhat surprisingly, the answer appears to be no.
I think that's a really interesting point, is this divorce became more prevalent, and what they're seeing is that as the generations go by, children of divorce are more likely to fight and not get a divorce because they've seen the destruction that divorce creates in the family dynamic. And so I think his point is, well, you would think as people got divorced more because when they had more partners, then that would change people's mindset. And he's saying that's not happening. People aren't going, well, wait a second, when I sleep with 12 people, this really affects the way I look at my husband or wife, and that's not changing in this society. So people are recognizing divorce as being a destructive thing, but they're not recognizing this sexual behavior as being any kind of impact.
They're not making the connection?
Yeah, I think that's what he's saying.
Even more noteworthy has been the decline in the proportion of women who get married having had only one sex partner, in most cases their future husbands. 43% of women had just one premarital sex partner in the 1970s. By the aughts, this was down to 21%. Dave, you want to explain what the 80s?
Yeah, aughts are zeros. So that's early 2000s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so in the 1970s, 43% of women had only one partner. By the 2000s, that dropped in half to 21%.
David, why is he using aughts instead of...
I don't know. I'm not sure.
To make us ask questions.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not sure why he would
use that. So A-U-G-H-T-S. I just learned something today. Aughts is zeros.
Yeah, aught is zero, yeah.
So by the turn of the century.
Yes.
This was down to 21%.
So only one in five women getting married in the 2000s had one sex partner. 80% had more than one.
Mm.
Neither of these two trends changed much after the first decade of the 21st century. Following in the wake of the sexual revolution, the 1970s have been characterized as a decade of carnal exploration. But this doesn't seem to have been the case for the vast majority of women who ultimately tied the knot in that decade. Almost two-thirds of them had at most one sex partner prior to getting married. Even in the 1980s, slightly over half of the women had a maximum of one partner, sex partner before walking down the aisle. Things looked very different at the start of the new millennium. So they're saying that...
So a significant change
in the 70s, you know, which would be considered a time of, well, he says sexual exploration, two-thirds or 67%.
Yeah, even though we put that date on the calendar as the turning point, it doesn't happen overnight. It takes a while.
Yeah. Yep.
So the chart that he has in the article will help us. He has 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, 2000s, 2010s. And the zero partner is 21%, 17%, 14%, 12%. By 2010, David, it's 5%.
That's 1 in 20. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
5%.
And it dropped 75%.
Yeah.
5%. So 95% of the marriages that are occurring, they had a partner.
Well, and what's even almost identical in that, you know, that curve is the 10-plus partners in 1970s are at 2%, and each decade, 2%, 4%, 10%, 14%, 18%. It's almost like they flip-flopped.
They did. Yeah, they did. There's no question about it.
Yeah, it was 21 to 2 in the 1970s. It's now the other direction, 18 to 5.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, think about it. Is in the 1970s, 1 in 5 women getting married were virgins. 1 in 50 had 10-plus partners. In the 2010s, 1 in 20 are virgins, and 1 in 5 have 10-plus partners. I mean, that's quite a swing.
10 partners is just a... That doesn't mean they had sex 10 times.
Right. That's 10 different
That's
partners.
10
yes.
different encounters. So for whatever... Something's happened to where women are now no longer looking at this as this emotional connection. It's just an act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even if you combine the first two, I mean, the So as you say, one partner, and he said earlier in the thing, a lot of times that one partner
is the one they marry.
Is the one they're getting married. Okay, so they had sex before they got married, but that's who they married. Well, if you combine those things in 1970s, that's 64%. That's why he was saying 2/3. And you combine that in the 2010s, and we're looking at 27%. So that's even less than half that are even in the 0-1 category.
Yep. And what would be interesting, Pastor, that we don't see in this data is you've mentioned it many times about how individuals are waiting until late 20s to get married. Well, when you say the number 10 partners, just thinking from, you know, a non-biblical worldview, well, 10 partners, that's one boyfriend a year from 18 to 28.
That's right. You're exactly right,
Brian. Which if I'm thinking from a carnal perspective, well, that's not that bad. Sleeping with one guy a year?
Yeah.
I mean,
right, I'm not a whore.
Yeah.
Right, I'm not a whore. I don't sleep around.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to bed with me the first night we go out, you know? And yet over a decade it has become this many different partners. What a startling statistic. So just the correlation then between the delay in getting married has got to be tied to this chart.
Especially as far, and you know, it's gradually gone up, but it's gotten to points of now, like you said, we're talking late 20s now in the average.
Right.
That's just the average. So, I mean, we've got
in order to get to an average, you got to have 30 and 35 and 40.
We've got plenty of older people that have never been married that are getting married. Now, you know, every situation isn't the same, but the way things get pushed in that direction, it has to have an impact.
So if for the woman it's 35 or 38, David, and she began her first sexual encounter at 18, then she's had 20 years of sexual encounters. So now, Brian, we're down to one every 2 years. So she definitely doesn't think she's sleeping around if she's had sex with somebody.
You can see how you get to 10 partners pretty easily in that, on that kind of scale.
Right. Or if it's divorce and remarriage.
Yeah.
Because then she had someone before she got married, and then her husband, her new husband. Right.
Yeah. So by the 2010s, only 5% of new brides were virgins. At the other end of the distribution, the number of future wives who had 10 or more sex partners increased from 2% in the 1970s to 14% in the 2000s, and then to 18% in the 2010s.
Which is what we discussed, right. Yep.
Overall, American women are far more likely to have had multiple premarital sex partners in recent years. Unfortunately, the NSFG doesn't have full data on men's premarital sexual behavior, and in any event, they recall their own marital histories less reliable than they do.
So they're liars.
or they're so promiscuous, they don't even remember who was who. You know?
Wow.
Or if this is a secular institution, just think about the number of sexual encounters that happen on college campuses under the influence of alcohol that you don't really remember the night.
So as premarital sex became more acceptable, it's reasonable to anticipate its negative effects on marital stability waned. In general, Americans became more accepting of non-marital sex. Certainly fewer men entered marriage with the expectation of a virgin bride. All of the fanfare associated with the hooking up is evidence that some young people have become comfortable with the idea of sex outside of a serious relationship. Be that as it may, this prediction is only partially borne out of the data shown in Figure 1, which we discussed. The following chart depicts the percentage of first-time marriages ending in divorce within 5 years of wedlock according to the decade the wedding took place and how many sexual partners a woman had prior to marriage. So where's this chart?
Should be that next
right
one there.
Okay. So now this chart, dear listener, has zero partner, one partner, two partner, three partner, four, five, six, all the way across. And then it has the chance of divorce after 5 years. So, zero partners, the chance of divorce is about 11%. Am I reading that right, guys?
Yes.
Depending on the decade.
Okay, what are...
Because we have the two lines plotted, and it looks like you've got the 1980s, which is the bullets on the line.
The lower
and then,
line.
Yeah, and then you've got the line with the triangles on it, which
is
the
2000s.
This is
more effective in color, but...
So you've got two lines coming across.
Yep.
The kind of the back one with the bullets on it is the 1980s. The front one with triangles is the 2000s, so 20-year gap.
And the difference is 5%, and now it's 11%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is the way I'm reading that.
Yeah. On the zero to one partner.
Yeah, maybe we should just pause the recording for a second and get a better chart to make sure we're giving our listeners some good data. Okay, so I've got the chart up now in color, guys, and it's actually three. The first is the blue one, and then the pink one, which is the 1990s, and then the yellow one, which is the 2000s. So, in 2000, during the 2000s, or the turn of the century, the yellow indicator is if you had zero partners, 5%. Your chance of divorce was 5%.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it doesn't get my... And it only goes up to, I say only, it only goes up to 11% or perhaps 12% in the in 1980s. So in either case, that's a solid number.
Yeah. And so what it's showing you, too, is people with zero that are getting married as virgins, as time goes on, they're becoming less and less likely to divorce. Even in the 1980s, it was 12. Now it's all the way down to 5.
It's dropped.
Yeah, right? So if you get married as a virgin today, you are even less likely to get divorced than your parents were, or your grandparents were, maybe.
Wow. And then one partner, it goes up. Two partners, it peaks up. And then three, it actually drops. Four, it actually drops. Six to nine is just about the same. And then it goes back up on 10 partners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas so, in the 1980s, 10-plus partners dropped, but... After the 1980s, with the 1990s and the turn of the millennium, it started to increase and on a higher trajectory with the 2000s.
So basically, between three partners and nine, it's virtually the same.
Yeah, it's pretty much
roughly about 25%, 20-25%.
So I mean, I think what you see there is in the 2000s and on, having no sexual partners, your divorce rate has plummeted. And having more than 10, your divorce rate has skyrocketed.
Yep.
And that's
the data that you can extract out of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what is going on. So if you are having that many partners, you are 1 in 3, over 1 in 3, chances to get divorced, 1 in 20 if you get married as a virgin.
So if you have a partner, one or two partners, you've almost double the probability that you're going to get divorced.
Two, you've even more than that. But
right, but you, from zero to one, you double it, and one to two, you double it again, virtually.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So it's only until you just become promiscuous.
Yeah, that it levels out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, that it levels out. So again, here we have this very pragmatic, non-biblical perspective. Having zero partners is helpful. I don't know how else to say it. Right. And divorce is not a good thing. I mean, divorce is not a good thing. Forget about the biblical thing. Just forget about the biblical thing. David, you get married, you have a child, you get divorced, and now 10% or 15% or 20% of your income goes to child support. Mm-hmm. So then you're going to get remarried, and you're getting remarried at an 80%. I mean, you immediately enter into that marriage at a financial liability. And every single time there's a money issue, your wife is going to remind you that the reason we're having this is because you slept with so-and-so. Mm-hmm. I mean, the house is going to not come out.
Yeah, and it's going to create animosity on all sides. Because how could you not start viewing your children as a burden? How can you not start viewing, you know, your ex-girlfriend or ex-wife or whatever it is as a liability, as less than a human being, you know, as some sort of business transaction, and then it's going to create, like you said, it's going to create animosity in the new marriage. It doesn't work well in any kind of situation.
No, it really has all kinds of very pragmatic negative things.
And one of the things, I don't know that the author mentions it, but I was thinking about it when Dave told me what article we were going to do, is how much human nature is to compare items. And not even just talking about sexual partners. Talk about anything. Your favorite steak. Eat a steak at four different restaurants and see if you don't compare them.
Right.
Drive four different cars and see if you don't compare them.
We do that with everything.
Everything we compare. So for someone to say, well, you're not, well, you know what, I'm not going to compare the fact that I've had sex with these different individuals, that's a lie. Mm-hmm. We compare everything.
Yeah.
Because it's human nature. And so for you to say that, well, that's not going to matter, ask someone who has been in one of these, you know, multiple sexual partners, and see if they don't compare.
And ask them about the... It's undeniable that multiple sexual partners would have an impact on how you're going to view your wife.
Of course, absolutely.
Because you've taken on a... You can't help but take on an unbiblical view of women at that point. And, you know, it's gonna change things. It's gonna complicate the sex life. It absolutely is. And anybody who says it doesn't is lying. I mean, there's just no way that you can get through that unscathed.
And you could even take a step back from sexual partners to... Because you're going to have listeners, you're going to have audiences. They're going to say, well, I haven't had sex. Okay, well, step back to making out. Tell me what middle schooler or what high schoolers don't compare who's a good kisser or not. Social media is filled with examples of that kind of stuff. And so even if we're not talking about comparing sexual partners, compare the people you've kissed.
That's still a giving up of yourself
to somebody else. It's exactly what it is. But for some reason, we're going to have plenty of people, well, I haven't had sex. Yeah, but okay, if we talked about how many boyfriends you've had that you've made out with, well, the data's probably going to show us kind of the same thing.
Yeah. What if I would have stayed with her? What if I would have stayed with him? What if, you know. Probably the only other thing we probably want to look at, because we don't need to read the whole article,
right.
But there's another chart about that correlates the percentage of women who attend church weekly and how the marriage relationship works out. So that's that next graph.
The paragraph that goes with this chart is, generally speaking, women who have had multiple sex partners are less likely to be regular churchgoers. Since women with many partners don't consistently have high divorce rates, there is little reason to suspect that religion is an important explanation for the relationship between sex partners and divorce outside of women who marry having had one or no partners.
All right, so let's look at this chart. Let's see. The percentage of women who attend church weekly. All right, so again, the line is virtually the same between 80s, 90s, and 2000. Right,
yeah,
David?
It is. Yeah.
Right, it's just about the same thing. And so if you have zero partners, strong probability that you're attending church in the 2000s. Now, it's the top line again. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So with this perception of things are getting worse and worse, because remember, Brian, the 1980s is the roaring fundamentalism. It doesn't get any better than this.
Yep.
That's the Jack Howells days. That's the best we've ever been as a church and all that. But the data is actually showing different. The data is showing that it's even
greater percentage.
We have a greater percentage.
Yeah.
We have 70% of the women who have zero partners attend church on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
It doesn't say that they're religious or they have a personal relationship with Jesus, or it says they go to church.
Yeah.
Having a religious affiliation.
Right. They go to a church. They do this on a weekly basis. It's interesting because we have such pushback by this expectation, David, that you come to church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just want to manage my time, blah, 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 and all this nonsense. But yet the data shows that being faithful to a worship service, a weekly attendance, is good for your purity.
Yeah. And, you know, people like to point out the shortcomings. They like to point out the ones that slip up. Well, yeah, but 70%...
That's a solid number.
...are doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Right, 70%. Right. We're happy with 70% with a lot... Like, if David, if 70% of our congregation gave on Sunday morning...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then we'd be happy.
If 70% came back Sunday night...
Well, if 70% came back on Sunday night, you'd be overwhelmed. If 70% came to church.
Yeah. Or attended Sunday school, which we did pretty well on, still.
Right.
I mean, at least of the people that are there.
Right.
Yeah.
But 70% in many regards is a pretty solid number.
I mean, we'd love to have 100, but, you know, what organization has 100 on anything like that?
Mm-hmm.
And you just see that it just goes, the graph goes downhill from there.
Right.
You know, there's not many people that are attending church regularly and have 10-plus partners. Now, it's more than I thought it would be, but we don't know what kind of churches they're attending either.
Right. Nor do we know, David, the amount of time
that
has transpired over this.
Right.
You know, that's the piece that we don't know. We don't know whether they had a window of time in which they experienced some real backsliddenness, and so they're still being honest, or what's happening there. But once again, you get this drop on one partner, and it drops all the way to 48%, maybe somewhere around there. And it's almost identical. The blue, the pink, and the yellow line all converge,
yep,
virtually the same. And then you have a slight decline with 2, 3, and 4. 6 and 9, a little anomaly there, and then it does have a pretty substantial drop.
Yeah, but this one's an interesting one, because as soon as you go to 1, it drops over 20%.
Yeah. Yeah, this is
just one step drops you over 20%.
Yeah, this is the biggest drop. If we look at our thing, that line is that has the greatest drop.
Mm-hmm.
It's that one partner. What happens is they're feeling guilty.
Yeah,
that's the bottom line. I mean, we have church discipline cases of this exact thing, and I've said in staff meeting, I think they're sleeping. You know, oh, I can't believe that you even said that on the podcast. Why? We're trying to figure out. This was a person, David, who was faithful week after week, in their place, regular and consistent. And then this is what happens. They show up to church with their boyfriend. Show up to church with their boyfriend, and they're sitting together. And now nobody's coming to church. What do you think just happened?
Yeah, it's not comfortable to hear the truth of the Bible when you're in sin. It's just not comfortable.
It's bottom line. And they know they're wrong.
Yeah, of course they do.
Right. They're very convicted. And so what do? You just stop attending church.
Yeah.
Or you go to a larger church, David, where they don't know who you are.
Yeah, and that way I can check my block and get my conscience set a little bit and say I was in church.
That's right.
But I don't have to get down to accountability or anything like that.
We just come in. Yeah. Most people think we're married. We sit in the back. We attend our weekly religious event. Mm-hmm. And then we slip back out. And we say every week, we're going to do better. Yeah. We're going to do better. We're going to do better. And then we crash into this mess. And then we repent through our religious experience. And we're going to do better. And we are going to get married, just not now.
Yeah. So, the things that jumped out at me in the article is, it's very clear we've got scientific data here, you know, from a good survey, good institution, that says if you remain pure, you're less likely to get divorced, and if you're in church every week, you're less likely to compromise your purity. That seems like two very easy, logical things that the world would say you church guys are idiots about that. You know, you can't help it. People are going to have sex. It doesn't matter what you do. That doesn't seem to be what the data says.
So the data is, one, if you don't have a sexual partner before you get married, you have the least likely probability of being divorced.
Yeah.
5% was the number
in
the year 2010. And two, faithful attendance to church gives you the greatest probability that you won't compromise your purity.
Which is why I think your point to the graduates the other night about find a church. Because if you're at college and you don't have a church home, this data tells you exactly it right there. If you're not in church, what's going to happen?
And probably, David, the demographic that's not in church the most is the freshmen through seniors in college.
I would guess that,
And these are kids, many times, who grew up faithful,
faithful.
And then they just have this window of time, and it's almost a decade.
In many cases,
it was just given up and gone, and then they're trying to grab it back.
I think we could extend kind of the application of this out, even if for the young individual that has had one premarital sexual partner, just because you have doesn't mean that you need to abandon church.
Right.
I mean, maybe in the 1970s or the 1980s, you were shunned by your church because of it.
Right.
But
fix it.
That doesn't need to be the case now.
Right.
Reconciliation is available. Repentance is available. And getting back where you need to be should be your primary concern, instead of just, well, you know what? I screwed up once. I'm done for.
Absolutely. All right, listener. We appreciate you jumping in here with us. This is our Thursday podcast on Wednesday. And we hope that you have enjoyed this article as much as we have. Just another pragmatic reason why God's plan is the best plan. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.